皆さんこんばんは。アニメアディクツアノニマスのライブブロードキャストを聞いていただきます。
You are listening to the Anime Addicts Anonymous Podcast. Make your anime addiction worse at aaapodcast.com. And now, here are your anime addicts.
Welcome to a storytime episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. The reason why we're doing this episode is because Mitsugi is going on a 3-week vacation, and so there will be no one here to do podcast episodes for you. And so these are being recorded in advance so that you have something to listen to, so that you don't go crazy in the interim on your long commutes or on your busy days at work or at the grocery store or the gym or wherever you listen to us. So I was thinking, what is the topic that is most likely to interest the most number of people? And I was thinking, well, a lot of podcast listeners who like anime also want to go to Japan. It's a dream of a lot of people. And since Chiaki and I have both done that, you know, we thought, what better to talk about than to share our story of how we went from living in the United States to living in Japan from start to finish, so that you can have as much information as you possibly can if you, too, would like to try to do the same thing. So Chiaki's actually with me here today. So how are you, Chiaki?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me here. I'm actually really excited for these episodes because I think it's a really good opportunity to kind of be maybe a little bit more laid back and just kind of tell you guys a story and not be worried about, oh, got to do this and got to do that and whatnot, and really hit on all the important points of what it entails, because it's kind of this romantic idea of going and living abroad and getting yourself to another country and the process involved of making that happen. But I really think that there is a lot of not so glamorous aspects to it that people don't think about. And that's kind of how it is. And that's the realities.
Yeah, I'm sure we can cover those things.
Yeah.
So I honestly can't remember where the decision to go to Japan came from. I know I was sort of at a point in my life where I had worked a job for a couple years. The job kind of wasn't really going to take me anywhere. And I know that you had just graduated with your master's degree. So I think that it was maybe a decision, a mutual, like, well, there's no real reason not to go do something fun.
Yeah, I looked at it and I just finished my master's and I had been working at a company and it was a good company and it was a good job, but much like you, it wasn't going to go anywhere long term, and it was going to be a job that you worked for a couple of years and got your experience and then moved on. But I thought to myself, well, if I'm in this situation anyway, why don't I just go now? Because when's the next time in my life that I'm going to be able to get up and go to a foreign country? I figured the next step after I had my job was getting a better job and probably getting married and potentially starting a family or buying a house or having kids or some kind of combination of those things. And some of those have come to pass, and obviously some of those haven't had any kids yet. But it definitely is something that I'm really glad that I did when I did it, because it was something that I always wanted to do. I always said to myself, one day I'm going to get there. I'm going to go to Japan and I'm going to live there. And I studied abroad there, as most of you know, and I had traveled there, but I really wanted to spend time in the country. And I really wanted to be able to say that I had lived abroad, because that's something that not a lot of people get to say. And I think it's definitely something that you learn from deeply and fundamentally grow as a person doing. And I really wanted that experience. So yeah, I don't know. I can't think of like a day that was like the, okay, we're going, it's going to happen. But I just remember dozens of conversations kind of ping-ponging it back and forth of just hanging out. Wouldn't it be cool if it just went to Japan type of thing?
I remember the day where I finally got the job offer, but backing up from that, getting the job to go to Japan is not hard. There is a caveat. You have to have a college education. You have to have a college diploma, or you have to have something like 8 to 10 years of teaching experience. Probably the diploma is actually the easier route. So for those of you that, you know, have met or will meet that requirement, that's, you know, this is something that you could do. But so long as that is met, getting the actual job to go to Japan to teach English is pretty easy. I mean, you go on Gaijinpot, you splash your resume around, and you wait a little bit, and you will get some interviews, and they conduct their interviews on Skype.
Yeah, there's usually, so I went on Gaijinpot. I actually looked at a number of job boards, and I looked to try to see what was out there, because in my mind, if I could get a job that was in line with my field, which is in business and marketing, if I could get a job that was in line with that, that would be something that I'd want to get, because then it would be like I went to Japan, continued to build my resume. And I looked around, and that was just impossible. Any job that was business function required you to have N2 or N1 Japanese, and that references the JLPT, which is the Japanese language placement test, for anyone who doesn't know. And there's 5 levels of that, and N5 is the lowest and N1 is the highest. And I barely probably scraped by at an N5, and there was no way that I could do those jobs. So I knew that I was going down the teaching route, and I found a number of Japanese job boards. But the thing that I loved about Gaijinpot was it made it so easy. It's almost like LinkedIn, but for Japanese jobs, is probably the best way I can describe it, because you make a profile and you set up your resume, and you can have multiple resumes and multiple cover letters saved that are all kind of tailored a little bit differently depending on the job you're applying to. And then employers can contact you and ask if you're interested in jobs they may have. And it is a really great system, and it's a really easy system to use. And I probably applied to, I don't know, maybe like 20 jobs before I got the first one.
I would say no more than 20 for me.
Yeah, probably about 20 before I got my first interview. And then after that, I probably applied to maybe about like 10 more before I ended up with a company that I got hired by.
I think I had 3 interviews. I did one of them with no pants on. That's a true statement.
You're never wearing pants, Mitsugi.
You're not wearing
pants right now.
Actually, yeah, well, that's true.
It is.
That's true.
It is.
Well, I mean, when you're on Skype, they're not exactly going to make you stand up to do a pants check.
Though I will say, for anyone who's doing a Skype interview, I recommend wearing pants just in case have to get up and go get something.
Yeah.
It could be awkward.
Get a whiteboard or something to use to write with. They're probably going to ask you to demonstrate your teaching ability during the interview. But generally, it's not a super hard interview. They're just trying to make sure that you're a person with at least an average level of intelligence that actually does speak English. If you claim to know some Japanese, they will probably have a Japanese speaker who will quote-unquote test you, like talk to you for a moment, and that's a little nerve-wracking.
But that's not going to help or hurt you in many cases, because in a lot of cases, most people who end up going to Japan end up at an Eikaiwa, which is a Japanese language conversation school, or as an ALT, an assistant language teacher. And in both of those positions, I've actually heard companies say that they don't want people who can speak Japanese. They look for people who don't know any Japanese, because their whole idea is that if you don't speak Japanese, then you can't use any Japanese in the classroom. And their whole thing is, you know, complete immersion and stuff like that, which personally, and this may be getting ahead of ourselves, but personally, I think that's kind of dumb.
It's dumb.
Because you'll be sitting there struggling in a classroom trying to explain, I don't know, cloud or something. And that's a simple one. But you'll be sitting there trying to explain it, and it's a lot easier just to say what it is in Japanese, or say the grammar in Japanese if it's a simple grammar type of thing. Like trying to explain the possessive grammar? What is that thing called?
Apostrophe.
Thank you. Oh my
Jeez.
God.
Well, I guess we know that one of us doesn't speak English.
Trying to explain that can be difficult, and it's a lot easier to say nani nani no nani nani. But it's definitely a mixed bag. But don't think if you can't speak Japanese that or even that you need to you know, I'm going to study so much Japanese so I can get a better chance at having a job. It really doesn't help or hurt you that much.
So you're probably going to have a lot of stuff when you find your job, and you're probably going to have to do something with it. So if you're me, you sell everything. So I basically sold everything. I even sold constructed Lego sets. I took them apart and sold them deconstructed and got a fair amount of money for them. I sold my car. I sold, I had a lot of computer parts. I had bicycle equipment, mountain biking equipment, all the furniture. I mean, literally, I had a walkthrough, basically an estate sale where people would just walk through my house and pointed to my blender and said, I'll give you $10 for the blender. I'll give you $5 for the rice cooker.
Are we moving too fast on this topic? Because I feel like we've skipped a number of important things. And I don't know how in-depth you want these story times to be, but there's a couple things that we haven't mentioned.
Like what?
Well, like contracts, for one.
Well, I mean, I was only planning on this recording being about 45 minutes, and I was going to go through, like, the airport, traveling, cars, houses, phones.
Straight getting set up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not going to happen. If we start talking about contracts, read your contract carefully. I mean,
yeah.
Right? I mean, generally speaking, if they say you're making X number of dollars per hour, make sure that you're working, that you're guaranteed a certain number of hours of work per week. Make sure that if you're in the office and you're not teaching, that you're still being paid, because Japanese companies will love to have you sit. You know, you'll have downtime in between lessons, and they won't pay you for it. The generally speaking, Eikaiwa work is pretty brutal. You're going to have to sometimes go from school to school. You may have to have a car. The pay is not very good. I'd say nowadays, with the bad exchange rate, it's averaging about $21,000 a year. And that's, like, pretty decent, actually, for that. And it's going to be really awkward hours because you're always teaching businessmen and stuff. So you're going to be working like 2 p.m. to 11 p.m.
The schedule may not be set. Just when it comes to getting the job, don't immediately take the first thing that comes your way. And as we've said before on the podcast, it is easier to switch jobs once you're in Japan if you want to later on. And so you kind of have to take what you can get to some extent, but go in with both eyes open as much as possible, because there will be the Eikaiwa that's like, oh, your base salary is 12,000, but don't worry, if you work an extra blah 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 teaching hours a week, you can make up to 40,000.
I think with my school, it was like 180,000 was the base salary, which sounds like a lot of money, but it's not. That's per month, so that's like, I don't even know what the math is on that. Maybe you can do it. And then they say, oh, but you get paid 2,300 yen per hour over your base hours. But I never broke my base hours.
Yeah, you almost have to kill yourself to do it.
Yeah, you got
to
kill yourself to get over that number. And so you don't really ever get that extra, like, overtime pay. You know what? I can really simplify this a lot by just saying, go work for Interac. I've done that. I worked for Interac. The contract doesn't jerk you around. You're going to get to work with young kids. Go for the elementary school kids. It's a lot more rewarding having kids that actually want you to be there. So teaching the elementary school kids is just like a laid-back, fun thing. You get to play lots of games.
And you get a really good taste of Japanese culture being an alt, because you'll eat kyushoku with the kids, which is the school lunch, and you'll play in the schoolyard with the kids, and you'll just really kind of get a cool... And all the anime that you've ever seen that takes place in school, you'll get all of that weird nostalgia of, I shouldn't have nostalgia for this, but I do because I've watched so much anime.
And all the little kids will ask you cute questions. Like, nay, Chiaki sensei.
Yes.
Ichiban suki na kurumo no wa nani?
I don't know. What's your favorite?
Eigo wakanai.
That's basically the exchange.
But they'll ask you, like, what's your favorite fruit? What's your favorite animal? What's your favorite anime? Like, these kids will go ape shit. You mention one anime, they'll lose their minds. So I recommend Interac, and you can just skip all the worries.
Yeah.
Because it's going to pay about just slightly above average. It'll pay more than an Eikaiwa, but it's slightly above average, and the contract isn't out to kill you.
Yeah.
So
Anyway, sorry. As Mitsugi was saying, sell all your stuff. It's
sell
just,
it all.
It's just way easier. If you have a family member that you can be like, hey, can I keep a closet at your house? Before I left, I went to my parents and I'm like, can I have a closet? And I had a closet that I filled up with a couple Tupperware containers of just things that I didn't want to part with. Either they were expensive and I didn't want to take them over to Japan, but I also didn't want to get rid of them, or just things that were sentimental, you know, whatever the case may be. Have a plan to store a little bit of stuff, because you don't want to lug everything, especially because going to Japan is not a, in my personal opinion, unless you are trying to be an language teacher or in education, it's not something you're going to do long term. Or unless you're very good at Japanese already and you're like at N3, almost N2, and you want to try to get N2 and then get a different job. I would definitely say this is something you do for a year, maybe two, at most three. Go have a good time, but plan on returning home at some point.
Yeah, I mean, the exchange rate will make it so that you can't really save any money. Your money will be worthless. So just blow it all in arcades and stuff, honestly, before you come back, because...
And living there gets very expensive after the first year. The taxes are based off your previous year's income, and it's fiscal year starting and ending in April, not calendar year. And they calculate things like your health insurance. It's the national health insurance, which is almost like a health tax. And that is calculated out based on your previous year's income. So the first year, you have no previous income. So you have a ton of extra money because your taxes are like the absolute lowest bracket. But starting from the second year, you're going to have more taxes.
Yeah, I mean, starting from the second year, it's still kind of reduced because you haven't worked the entire prior year.
It depends on when you got there. Yeah, but
I mean, so like when I arrived in September, so I really didn't have a whole lot of money from the prior year. So I think I basically was scot-free that time too. But if you're there... If you're there paying taxes after your first full year of working, then you get hammered.
Yeah, and it can be a lot. So plan on not selling everything to the point, unless you're really committed for some reason to moving, and then more power to you, go for it. But I ended up taking, I had two large suitcases, one carry-on, and a backpack. And that was basically what my life got down to. And what to put in those large suitcases. Ladies, if you have breasts larger than a B cup, bring extra bras, because you will not find them in your size. Definitely that. If you're... A Westerner and you're larger than a size 6 or an 8, bring as many pants as you can. Tops, you might be able to find some things, but pants are really tough over there. I had a hard time finding things to fit into, and I would say I've been floating between like an 8 and a 12 in women's size for the past like 4 years. So those are two things I would definitely recommend seeing that they make it into your suitcase as far as what to bring. Other things are kind of basic, but those two are essential.
So pack light, don't bring much. We've talked about those sorts of things on the podcast. The flight, if you can go for the layover. I think it'll be cheaper. You know, you're probably going to have to lay over in California or Chicago.
Well, the layover is kind of nice, too, I think. And we're coming from the East Coast. So if you're starting in California, congratulations. You're already part of the way there. But I kind of like the layovers on really long flights, because it's like, okay, get 4 or 5 hours out of the way, get out, stretch your legs, then gear up for the next flight.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty long. I recommend... If you can, I like to bring like a sleeping pill with me. I'm not going to be shy about that. Take the sleeping pill. Eat your dinner on the plane. Take your sleeping pill and just go bye-bye.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be 12 hours minimum, and that's a long time to be sitting.
If you know you're going, stop going to the movie theaters, because they actually usually have some decent movies on the international flights and some fairly recent ones. So that's always a good way to pass the time is... watch some movies and catch up on that. But the flights are just something everyone always asks me, like, you're so good with international flights. How do you do it? And I'm like, you just do it. You're on a plane and you can't get off the plane and you're there. You're committed. So
yeah, pretty much. I mean,
there's no trick to it. The best thing I can say is for jet lag, 24 hours before, set your watch or your phone or whatever to the time in the place that you are going to, and then only sleep if it is night there. So even if on the flight, even if everyone else is sleeping, if it's not night at the destination that you're going to, don't sleep yet. And that can suck sometimes, because I've been on some flights that have just timed out where the flight starts in the morning and I got to stay up the whole flight. But I usually suck it up and do it, because that does help with jet lag.
So if you're working, let's skip forward a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you're working at Kiowa, you might have to drive to your job. And if you have to drive, you're going to have to get a car. Now, you can get a car in Japan pretty cheap. You don't have to be one of those people that goes for the fancy. I knew a guy that had a Miata, and he paid out the nose for it. Honestly, you can get like a little K car. Getting the K car isn't fun. It's not glamorous, but
I liked my K car.
You can get a K car for like $700, and after the shotgun, it'll be like $1,200, and you have to pay a lot less road taxes for having it because it's a K car. They encourage the usage of those types of vehicles, and they give tax breaks and monetary benefits for owning one.
So to explain to people what a K car is, Japan has a tax system that's it's meant to discourage overuse of carbon dioxide producing methods of transportation, basically. And if you own a car, you have to pay a road tax, which goes to, I don't know, carbon emission reduction and road maintenance, I think. And you also have to pay a shoken. And what those are is the road tax is just you own a car, congratulations, you have to pay it. And
that
kicks in after the first year. And that's based off of how powerful your car is. So a K car is a car that's under a certain weight and has less than a certain power. And we're talking basically like, think of your lawnmower, but with a car aluminum body on it. Like, it's something that Mitsugi and Dustin could... Sorry. It's something that Mitsugi and Cram could pick up just with the two of them.
Yeah. It looks like the maximum displacement for a K-car is 660 cc's.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, is like nothing.
It's like a lawnmower with a car. Yeah. It's...
And maximum load capacity of only 770 pounds. Yeah. So, not a whole lot.
But the roads in Japan also, like the highways, and these are the fast roads, are like 80 kilometers an hour, maybe 100, which if you're in the States, that's like 40, 50 miles an hour, and that's the fast highway. Most roads are like between 25 and maybe 40 kilometers an hour. So you're not going very fast.
Yeah, it looks like the taxable amount, the vehicle excise tax is 2% lower. The automobile weight tax is something like $100 a year lower.
And that's another thing, though, that doesn't kick in until after the first year you've owned the vehicle. So if you have to buy it, then you can work that out. I would greatly recommend a job that doesn't involve you having to find your own vehicle. If I had to redo my experience in Japan over again, that would be the one thing that I would do differently, because owning a car is just a hassle.
Yeah,
you have the road tax that you have to worry about. You have the shoken, which is good for 2 years, and it's basically it's a car exam that certifies that your car is safe to drive on the road, and it's been maintained well and whatnot. But that's another thing you have to pay for, and that can be like $1,000 expense, even for a K car. And then you have to deal, of course, with the cost of gas, which K cars don't use that much gas, but it's still another expense. And then you have to deal with the hassle of getting the car, which if you don't speak Japanese, you're at the mercy of whoever can help you. And then selling the car is the same situation. And I've heard that if you don't sell it, quote unquote, properly, that you could end up with a car that's still technically in your name and other people could drive it. And if they end up crashing it and the city hall has the wrong name, then you could have a record in Japan technically. Like I've heard, I don't know if that's happened to me, but I've heard some things that's possible if you don't do the process right. And so I would say find a job that if you do have to commute, you commute to places either within biking distance, walking distance, or by train, and try to stick to that, because owning a car is just a hot mess.
Yeah, it's true.
And then you have to find a place to park
it. Parking can be expensive.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a drain.
And if you do have to have a car, you can get a international driver's license from AAA. They offer it. You don't even have to take a test. You just kind of go and they give it to you. If you need to get a Japanese license, like usually the AAA temporary license only lasts 1 year. If you have to take the Japanese test, it's very difficult. You will fail it once, I guarantee it.
They kind of do it on principle.
Yeah, they'll fail you on principle. You could drive that. I drove that test perfectly the first time. It was literally a work of art, and I still failed it. So you're going to fail it once. Or I've heard of people failing it like up to 5-6 times.
And it's very expensive because you have to go probably out to the middle of nowhere. You have to take time off work. You have to pay money and wait every time you take it. It's owning a car in Japan is just not a fun experience. And with the licenses, you have to do that after a year. And you might be thinking, well, I can just renew the international license. But yes, you can. You technically can do that. But if you get pulled over and on your gaijin card, your foreigner's card, it shows that you've been in Japan for more than a year and you're still driving on an international license, I've heard the cops will ping you for it if you get pulled over. I think I saw like one cop while I was there. So
yeah, another thing is cell phones.
Yes.
It's not really fair, but because you're a foreigner in Japan, a lot of cell phone companies will make you buy your phone outright. If you're like me and you wanted a smartphone, like an iPhone, which is, by the way, very popular in Japan, they'll make you buy the 5 phone outright instead of allowing you to... They kind of do the reverse. Like in the United States, they gradually charge you X number of dollars like of the phone's cost as part of your plan. I think that's how it works a lot of the time.
Well, the United States model is changing as well. When I got back, I had to buy my phone outright.
In Japan, what they did was I had to put up the $700 or whatever it was for the phone, and then they deducted a small amount from the actual like monthly fee of service to make up for the cost of having to buy the phone up front, because they're worried, and I'm sure for good reason, that as a foreigner, you're just going to buy a phone, and then if they don't make you pay for it up front, you're just going to leave the country with it. I'm sure that's happened enough times that they have a legitimate reason to be worried about it. It's not fair, but that's how it is.
On the plus side, though, once you own the phone, you can resell it. And of course, you're not going to get close to what value is, but you do get a little bit back. So that's something that you can do. And have the other thing worth mentioning, we've talked about phones and cars. Oh, one other thing with the phone that's awesome, and I don't know if this has changed in the year and a half, 2 years or so that I've been back now. It's almost 2 years. That's crazy talk. But they still have unlimited data plans.
Unlimited, which
is really nice. But
especially if you watch anime on your phone and burn through like gigabytes and gigabytes per week.
Do you know somebody who does that, Mitsugi?
That will be me, actually. So I found my car. I actually forgot the model. It was the Mitsubishi Minica, which I guess is kind of like they meant to say mini car, but they forgot the R on the end, so it's Minica.
Mine was a Suzuki Alto.
Suzuki Alto.
I actually like that
car. Kawaii.
It was kawaii. The other thing that you'll have to do once you get over there, we've talked about transportation a bit and communication a bit, is housing. Now, housing, there are some Eikaiwa or even ALT, usually private ALT positions, not usually through something like Interac, that will have housing with the position. If you can get somewhere that has housing, choose that job, because it's usually close. If they have housing, it's because they have enough people coming in and out that they've just bought out a place and rotate out whoever is there at the current time, and so they probably got a place close or somewhat convenient to get to the school or wherever that you're teaching. The other thing is that Japanese apartments and houses do not come with anything. And I know that seems like a weird thing to say, because you might be thinking like, well, of course not. When you get a house or an apartment here in the States, unless you get it furnished, it doesn't come with anything. Well, no, that's not quite. When I say it doesn't come with anything, I mean it doesn't come with
toilets.
Anything.
Like, no toilet.
It has a toilet. But
they give you a box.
It doesn't come with blinds. It doesn't come with light fixtures. There's like sockets on the ceiling that you can plug your own into. It doesn't come with appliances like a refrigerator or a stove or a washing machine. It doesn't come with any kind of furniture or anything when I say it comes with nothing, I mean you get four walls and a roof, and that's like what you get.
That's the normal thing. But for me, I moved into a house, a full-size house that a family's like grandfather had just passed away, and they were renting his house out, and they left all of his appliances and furniture inside the house.
Well, they were going to get rid of it.
Yeah, they were going to trash
it.
And so I was like, no, just leave it here, and I will use it. So I had like the fridge, the washer, the dryer, the Japanese electric toilet that like talks to you, the built-in Kotatsu built into the floor. You know, a leather sofa, leather chairs. Like, it was some nice stuff. So, I mean, I got really lucky. I had the absolute 100% most ideal situation that anybody could possibly be in. Not to mention the house was, like 2,800 square feet.
Yeah.
It was huge.
You could have probably fit you and, like, five other people in there comfortably.
Oh, yeah. There were enough bedrooms for, like, four people. It was, like, a four-bedroom house. It was nuts. And I was just slightly north of Tokyo, not even that far away from Tokyo, honestly, and the rent was not even $1,000 a month. So, I mean, it was like, I think it was like $700.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, people hear about Japan and they think, oh, tiny little closet that'll cost $2,000. Well, that's just not true. I mean, if you're in a suburb, like, even if you're in Kashiwa, which honestly is like biking distance from Tokyo practically, you're going to get away. You can get a pretty decent place for not that exorbitant price that you hear about.
I mean, it's basically like, think of it as like living in New York City. Thinking of it as living in New York City on Park Avenue versus living 40 minutes outside of New York City and the price difference between those two locations. That's really what it is. And I think, yes, Tokyo is, I, at least the last time I checked, the most expensive city in the world. Literally, it is. Number one on the list. But if you want to live in Tokyo, you're going to pay out the nose, and you're probably going to pay out the nose for a very tiny place, like a studio 40 square feet type of place. But if you're fine living a train ride away, which really the best thing I can say is be close to a station. That's the only thing I can strongly say, is that no matter where you live, be within walking distance of a station. Because if you're within walking distance of a station, you can get to anywhere. And your life is awesome.
Yeah, literally anywhere. The train lines in Japan are very comprehensive. They'll take you just about anywhere you want. So, yeah. And then there's coming back from Japan. If you want to skip ahead. I don't have anything super pressing besides the basics.
I'm fine with coming back.
Coming back from Japan is tricky. Also, you have to get rid of, if you have a car, you're going to have to sell it. And as Chuck, you mentioned, you have to properly dispose of it. You can't just like pawn it off or leave it someplace. You're going to have to do something with your money. And here's a story. When I came back from Japan, I had like, I don't know, it was like $10,000 saved. And the bank thought I stole it. Because I guess they'd never seen a person trying to wire that much money back to a foreign country. And so they wanted to have, like, every bank record, my tax statements, all this stuff I didn't have with me. And honestly, like, there's no other reason why they would have asked for that information. Other than the fact that they were just suspicious that I wasn't actually mine. So,
yeah, I mean, it's not like they'll outright say, we thought you stole this, but
Eventually, I think they gave up because they just wouldn't want to have to deal with me anymore and just let me go.
Well, I mean, same thing happened to me. And it was at the point where I was producing passports and basically W-2 statements and the signed contract of where I was working and my all of my pay stubs. And that's one thing I will say is if you're working over there, save all of that. Not just because of this whole bank situation, but just because it's so good to have on hand for when you have to do taxes back here in the States or if something happens or whatever. Like, save all of your pay stubs and your Japanese equivalent of what is a W-2, your tax forms and things like that, because it's just so good to have. I mean, I've referenced them a number of times since I got back for various things, so.
Yeah, so there's that. And we've already talked about the exchange rate. But by the time you're listening to this and planning on going to Japan, the rate might be different.
Yeah.
So it could be better or worse. So pay attention to that closely.
One thing I will say is transfer your money, exchange your money at a bank. Never exchange in the airport. Bring money in the airport and just exchange a little to get you somewhere and then take out from an ATM or something. It's just way better.
Yeah, the fees or whatever are much lower.
Yeah.
So coming back from Japan is tough. The jet lag is brutal. It's actually more difficult coming back for some reason. I'm not sure why that is, but it just always seems to be the case. You will feel it more on your way back. But, you know, you'll get used to it. It'll take you 10 days to adapt. They say it's one day for every hour difference.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But you'll be back on your feet at about, like, you'll be probably back on your feet around 3 or 4 days, and then you'll probably have, like, another week or so when you're just adapting. You probably go to bed way early and wake up way early, but it won't be, like, 1 a.m. wide awake or something after 3 or 4 days.
You may have to sell a bunch of your stuff, pack light on the way back. You know, the airline's going to charge you a lot of money to carry the baggage onto the plane. And honestly, I don't know if it would be cheaper to have it mailed back or not.
That's actually one thing I wanted to mention. It's not. Well, going over to Japan, it is cheaper to bring your stuff on the plane with you. The airline will charge you like $100 for a giant bag up to, and again, this can change whenever airlines change their pricing all the time. So check, but it was like $100 for a giant bag extra up to 60 pounds. And that was way cheaper than sending the stuff. And plus, I knew then I had it with me. That was the thing about shipping to Japan, was on the way over, I was just like, it's cheaper basically to do it to bring it with me and pay the baggage fee and just suck that cost. On the way back, Japan does offer freight shipping, which is like you put it in a box and they load it up on a boat and ferry it over to the US, and that takes months. But if you don't care when you're getting the package, then it really doesn't matter. So you can look into it on the way back. But again, I went over with two suitcases. I paid the $100 for the extra one, or I think it was three. I think the extra one was the third. Yeah. But I went over with three, paid the $100 for the extra one, and then I got back down to three suitcases on the way back. And I think I threw out some clothes that I'd worn to the point of threadbare over there and made room for anime figures and stuff, because I was going back to the States, so I could buy new clothes, and I needed to anyway. But I just paid the baggage fee.
You're also going to have to cancel any kind of insurance you have, like life insurance, health insurance, your car insurance. All that stuff has to be canceled. And you'll probably have to go to City Hall to do a lot of that. You're gonna have to go to City Hall when you get to Japan to file for your residency or whatever. And then when you leave, you have to file again, you know, that you're leaving or whatever. And
I mean, I've heard that you don't technically have to do it, but I think it's like a really good idea to do it. That's something that you should do. And then a lot of things may be taken care of by your job, which is nice. And I also recommend staying in the country for a month if you can, after you've moved out of your place. So if you have a place that you can crash at for like a month and maybe travel a bit or whatever after, because there are things like your last cell phone bill, your last electric bill, your last gas bill, your last, well, rent you may be able to pay in advance when you hand over the key. But there's a lot of bills that will come in after, a month after, and you either will need to leave money with someone and have them pay it, or stay with someone and pay it yourself when it comes in. And I chose to just stay with someone because I had someone that I could stay with, and I was like, okay, this is perfect. I'll just stay and I'll travel a bit and make use the most of a month off, basically, before I go back to the States and find a new job that I probably won't have any time off for a while. So
that's another thing we never mentioned, was signing up for insurance and things like that.
Well,
not insurance, like internet and gas. Like, it's really a good idea to ask your company that you sign up with to help you with these things. They probably will help you because they know that you can't really communicate with the internet company and stuff. But hey, Japan's on 100% fiber, so that's good.
The best thing I can say about going to Japan is just be very honest with how long you intend to stay, because then that'll help the company kind of figure out what to do with you, and it'll set their expectations of how much help you need. Like, if you're going to stay there longer, you might get in with a company that wants you to do something like get a car or whatever. But if you say, oh yeah, I could stay in Japan for like 3 or 5 years, and really you only plan to be there for a year, just be upfront with that, because it's kind of that you really want to go and you want to say what you think they want to hear to get over there. And who knows, maybe you'll stay 3 years. But if you're really planning on like just staying a year, just tell them. And then if the company doesn't accept you because you're only going to be there a year, chances are they're probably not a company that is looking for a candidate that will need the amount of help that you'll need.
So I don't really have a whole lot more I want to say. The only other thing I would mention is that don't worry about your visa. The company that sponsors you will get the visa for you. It does take a while for the visa to come in. Mine took a long time. It was like 2 months or something. And that'll give you enough time to figure out how to like to prepare for leaving.
Yeah.
So you'll have time to sell your things, make arrangements with family, you know, whatever it is that you feel like you need to do. You'll have time to do that, and their company will take care of the visa. And if you decide to stay until the visa expires, they'll renew it for you. So you don't have to worry about any of that. Okay, so the next story time episode we do will be on either the bathhouse or Akihabara, whichever one I decide to release next. I don't know which one it will be. But
you never know.
What was that?
I said you never know. The suspense.
Yep. But if you like this episode, you can leave us some feedback. You can email me at aaamitsugi@gmail.com, or you can write us a mailbag on our website, or write us a review on iTunes, just letting us know how you like these episodes. And if you like them a lot, maybe we could do more of them. I don't know. But until next time, we'll see you guys next week with another Storytime episode.
Take care, everyone.